fiscal.
I don't do
that. I call this House Finance Committee to order. Let the record reflect that it is 1:33 p.m. on Tuesday, March 14th, 2023. Present today, we have Representative Josephson, Representative Hannon, Representative Galvin, Representative Stapp, Representative Colom, Representative Ortez, Representative Kronk, Representative Tomaszewski, Co-Chair Foster, Co-Chair Edgman, myself, Co-Chair Johnson. And today we will be, let's see, I would also like to make note that we are being assisted today by our LIO moderator, Emma Turner, our Finance Secretary, Bree Wiley. Today we're receiving a budget overview from the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority. Presenting today, we have Steve Williams, Chief Executive Officer for the Alaska Mental Health Trust. Mr. Williams, would you like to please come forward, place yourself on the record? And seeing no questions to begin, Mr. Williams, at your in your own timing, you're welcome to begin your presentation.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Welcome.
For the record, Steve Williams, the Chief Executive Officer for the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority. I'd like to thank the committee for their interest in an update on where the current Board of Trustees FY24 budget recommendations, specifically related to the general mental health, general fund mental health dollars in the mental health budget bill, HB 41, stand at this point in the budget process. Just to real quick, because I was here at the beginning of February and you all heard a much lengthier presentation, the trust makes its funding recommendations and its policy recommendations to positively impact the lives of beneficiaries that are up on the screen, and this includes both children, youth, as well as adults. At the beginning of February, we presented the committee an update on our budget recommendations, and that at that time the governor had released his proposed budget. So this slide is an updated version of the slide you saw in early February, and this reflects what is now in the governor's amended budget, FY24 amended budget, compared to the Board of Trustees recommendations that were submitted in September to the administration and to the legislature. So looking just to orient folks to this slide, on the far left, you can see the budget line item or the project title. In parentheses, you'll see the department as to where the funds go to. MTAR is trust funding. That stands for Mental Health Trust Authority Authorized Receipts. And the blue shaded columns are the recommendations that were approved by the Board of Trustees and submitted. And then moving over to your right, the yellow columns now reflect what was included in the proposed budget, as well as the updates that were included in the amended. And the updates that were included in the governor's amended are highlighted in blue and italicized. We really do appreciate working with the governor and the administration to look at these recommendations again in between the release of the proposed and the amended deadline, and building back in some of the recommendations from the Board of Trustees. What I'll also note here is that there, across all of these recommendations, there are six departments that are implicated for receiving trust funds and or general fund mental health dollars. It's the Department of Health, the Department of Education, the University, the Department of Family and Community Services, the Department of Transportation, as well as the Department of Revenue funds going to the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation. The far right column shows what the current difference is between the trustee recommendations and what's in the FY24 amended budget. So I'll just kind of maybe walk down those for the committee. If you start off at Crisis Now Continuum of Care grants, You can see that there is $667,000 of the original million recommended by the Board of Trustees. So there's a difference right now of $333,000 in that recommendation. The second line is similar. These funds go to the Division of Public Health, not the Division of Behavioral Health. And you can see the difference in the what's outstanding between the governor's amended and the Board of Trustees' recommendations. Aging and Disability Resource Centers, the trustees recommended $250,000 of GFMH funding. There is still no GFMH recommendations in the amended. IT application and telehealth is a similar scenario. You can see the trustees recommended $63,000, and there is nothing in the amended budget at this point in time. I'd like to call out the Alaska Training Cooperative. In the proposed budget, it included $100,000 of GFMH, and in the amended, that was increased to reflect the trustees' recommendation of $150,000. Again, appreciative of that. And then in the operating budget, you can see the last one, the peer support certification. The trustees recommended $100,000 of general fund, and that is not in the amended budget. Going down the bottom portion of this slide, the rows there are capital items. And the ones to note here are related to the special needs housing grant, which goes again to the Department of Revenue, AHFC. The trustees recommended $1.7 million in special needs housing grant funds. The difference between the trustees and what's in the amended is $750,000. And then the housing assistance program, directly below that, you can see the difference again between what the trustees recommended and what's currently in the amended budget is $2 million. So the bottom line is between the operating and the capital funds, there's about $3.6 million difference between what's currently in the amended budget but not fully funding what the trustees approved back in September.
Madam Chair.
Representative Josephson?
Through the chair, Mr. Williams. Take, for example, the special needs housing grant. Your agency is giving this program $200,000. It made a recommendation of $1.75
million.
And the governor is giving a general fund, and the governor is giving $1 million. Will you still be giving your $200,000 since, even though you got less than you requested from the governor?
Through the chair to Representative Josephson, before I answer that question directly, I just want to note that the trust funds don't necessarily go dollar for dollar to what is recommended, obviously, for the general fund. So when we look at the end of the day, when the budget's enacted, if there are reductions to the general fund spending that were below what was proposed by the trustees, and there's some trust funding in that same line item, we will look at the impact to that reduced funding as to whether or not the project has enough funding to actually carry forward and do what was intended. We might have to scale something back, or there is the possibility that we might not provide the trust funding for that particular project. However, I would note that that is not something that has frequently occurred. I'm not even sure that I remember that ever occurring.
How will you communicate your final numbers to us, since we're going to be on the floor probably no later than April 1? So how will I know whether you're still going to provide $200,000 special needs housing grant or not?
Through the chair to Representative Josephson, at this point in time, the trustees would not be taking any action in terms of reduction of the MTARB recommendations. Obviously, there's a couple other steps that happen in the budget process. So once, you know, that action, if any, would happen after the budget is fully passed through the legislature and enacted by the governor.
Representative Foster.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I'm curious if you've got the FY23 numbers just for the items where there's a shortfall in general funds. And if you don't have that on you right now, just curious if you might know off the top of your head for housing assistance program. I see the governor's got $2 million less than what the trustees were hoping for. Do you know in FY23 what that number was? Is that...
Through the chair to Representative Foster, in FY23, it was $850,000, which is what is currently reflected in the budget. Okay. So the $2 million was to expand and increase funding to expand services.
Okay. And I don't suppose you've got the numbers for the rest of the items there, do you, for FY23, for just the ones where there's the far right column shows red?
Through the chair, Representative Foster, I can get that information for you and provide it to the committee.
Thank you.
So, can I ask a question?
Yes, Representative Benjamin.
So, kind of one of the bigger takeaways from the slide then is the focus on housing. Is that, I mean, you've got $6.3 million under housing assistance for HFC. But that's your biggest item here, isn't it?
Through the chair to Representative Edgman, in combined total, yes. And through the chair, I would also point out that the next probably largest items are related to the Crisis Now initiatives. And I believe this was mentioned in February when I did a presentation that although there isn't an MTAR increment next to those two lines, that the trust is heavily invested through the use of our authority grant funds, which go directly out to communities. To support in partnership these GFMH recommendations.
So if I may follow up. So the bigger takeaway is prevention oriented, right? I mean, is that another takeaway in terms of all this?
Through the chair to Representative Edgman, yes. And the trust has increasingly tried to move upstream, if you will, to intervene earlier. To avoid people being removed from communities or families being disrupted, and to obviously avoid any needed higher acute level of care.
Thank you.
All right. Next up, we have Representative Colom.
Hi, through the chair. Thank you. I wanted to ask about Crisis Now. So I know that, I mean, you guys were big proponents of the Crisis Now continuum. I remember you guys really being excited about that. Why did the Mental Health Trust decide not to fund that? Why is that all coming out of general funds?
Through the chair to Representative Colom, this is what I was referring to just a second ago. The trust is heavily invested. In fact, trustees have approved and we've granted out over $7 million over the last 2 years specifically related to Crisis Now work. We just do that direct. The trust has the authority to grant funds directly from the trust to a community organization. We don't necessarily need to go through the Department of Health or the Department of Family and Community Services to get those funds out for this particular initiative.
Can I follow up? So this money that should be or that's been requested by the governor, is that still going to the same program that you guys are funding through the community grants? Is it the same kind of thing?
Through the chair to Representative Colom, it could. Our funds could also be used for helping to start up or plan for new services in other communities, as well as some of the grants dollars that you see on the screen could also be used in the same way. This is an initiative that's coordinated with the Department of Health and Department of Family and Community Services with the trust.
Okay, thank you.
I'm sure. Senator Hannon.
Thank you, Chair Johnson. I have one question about Crisis Now and then one about the special needs housing. So do you have a sense between the Mental Health Trust recommendation level on the Crisis Now grants and what's currently in the budget, whether there are whole programs we won't be able to stand up? You know, we've been focusing on Crisis Now. Most of the projects are just now coming online and staffing up. I assume when your board evaluated those, it was to get the doors open, get the chairs available, staff them up and be operational. are there programs that with lesser money aren't going to be able to open?
Through the chair to Representative Hannon, the impacts of not having that full increment would be as you might suspect, which is they'd be either delayed implementation, or if there are current services that are operating, they might be needed to be scaled back. I would also note that it also might deter other communities or organizations from starting to stand up these services to actually implement the full continuum of care where it's possible.
Thank you. And my other question through the chair is on the special needs housing grant. Do you know when there was at last an increase to the special needs housing grant sent to AHFC? I've heard it was 2012, and I'm looking to see whether you know.
Through the chair to Representative Hannon, I was going to suggest it was somewhere around the 10-year mark, but not. I could get that year specifically for the committee if that's of interest.
I follow up question.
Yeah, that's an origin.
Yeah, I'm. Thank you, Co-Chair. I'm trying to dig a little bit deeper into this housing issue because housing in many of our communities is a number one issue. You know, I just met with a regional Native corporation and we talked about housing in their villages, and it's just absolutely the number one issue. But at the same time, we have workforce shortage issues. We've got supply chain issues. We've got things like that that, you know, we put a lot of money in the budget last year for deferred maintenance. Two-thirds of it got vetoed, and I'm not going to quibble with that. There could be legitimate reasons that there might be too much money out there on the street and so forth. But why would we not fund special needs housing grants and the housing assistance grant program through HFC and the part in the mental health trust fund, because that leverages a lot of other money and creates, you know, there's a force multiplier effect to it. But is there a rational, is there a way to respond to me as a policy member on the budget committee why we would reduce that, or is there a reasoning behind that? Or
through the chair to Representative Edgeman, maybe, Madam Chair, if I can, I've got some follow-up slides, but I'm just going to sort of like click through, and I'll go back and forth as people bring up these different questions related to.
Let's just take a look here. We have 10 pages. Maybe we should just go through the. Let's go through your presentation, and then we'll go pick up that question and go back, or you can address it as you go through, and then we'll wait and take all the questions at the end.
Okay.
I think that might be, it's not a long presentation.
No, and I'm hitting these very issues, so I'm happy to do that, Madam Chair. So this is just the slide that we were just talking about in regards to Representative Hannon's question about the Crisis Now Continuum of Care grants. You can see the difference between what the trustees recommended and what's in the amended. And I spoke to some of the impacts that would happen if those grants weren't fully funded at the recommended amount. This is, again, the crisis now. And for the first slide was funds that would go to the Department of Health Division of Behavioral Health. This slide represents funds that would go to the Department of Health Division of Public Health. And these funds are used particularly for smaller communities, rural communities that may not have the capacity to stand up all of the services that are outlined in the Crisis Now model, but are used for most frequently for standing up mobile integrated health programs, which is similar to a mobile crisis response team. It uses a paramedic and or a behavioral health specialist. The fund, there are three communities that currently are operating or in the process of implementing mobile integrated health teams. Copper River Native Association is one that has one up and operating. Juneau has a team up and operating, and we're now beginning the work with Ketchikan's Fire Department to look at implementing the mobile integrated health team down in Ketchikan. So similar to the previous line, that if this was not fully funded, it would obviously have impacts on the ability to expand to Ketchikan and or could have impacts to the ability for the teams that are operating to currently operate at their service capacity. The next line is related to the Aging and Disability Resource Centers. Again, this is Department of Health, Senior and Disability Services. There are six regions in the state that are served by 11 or 12 disability resource agencies, and these agencies really are sort of the connecting point for seniors and beneficiary seniors who are trying to figure out how to access home and community-based services, either in their community or around the state. The recommended $250,000 GFMH increment would allow for the addition of an additional location for an ADRC. If the funding were not included in the budget, obviously that expansion would not occur, but it wouldn't necessarily reduce the current capacity for those services. This is the $63,000 GFMH increment related to IT application telehealth services. These are funds that support a position within the department, and they are used to be able to help facilitate the use of telehealth assessments for home and community-based services to determine whether an individual is eligible and then what services are they eligible for. Those assessments are in the last fiscal year. There were over 1,800 assessments that were completed, and from a trust perspective, the majority of those were trust beneficiaries who received those assessments. Representative Edgman mentioned workforce a second ago. Peer support certification, as you've heard me mention, I'm sure you've heard the departments and others mention, peer support is a critical piece to addressing some of our workforce challenges, particularly when it comes to engaging individuals in the process of recovery, whether it's mental health or whether it's related to an addiction or substance abuse issue. In FY22, there were a little over 130 individuals who got certified through this peer support certification who then ran on and actually engaged and are a part of the workforce in organizations that provide these types of services. The $100,000 of GFMH, if it were not included in the budget, would really kind of constrict the oversight and training functions of the Commission for Behavioral Health Certification, who's responsible for, they worked with the department to actually develop the certification, and then they provide the oversight and training as someone goes through that process. That would be the implications of that particular increment. Special needs housing grant. These are the funds that go through AHFC. They're largely to increase capacity, capital, for adding additional permanent supportive housing in communities for individuals who experience disabilities or other significant or other categories of trust beneficiaries. In FY22, the funds helped to expand the bed capacity for Forget-Me-Not that operates down here in Juneau. It also expanded housing capacity out in the Matsu Valley through Valley Charities and their Bridgeway program. I mentioned, and I'll get the information as to when there was actually an increase in the funding for this particular program, but I think it's somewhere around that 10-year mark. The implications for not funding at the recommendation that the trustees made obviously would reduce the ability to expand actual capacity for housing in communities. Okay. And then the last increment, again, related to AHFC, the Housing Assistance Program. This provides both operational and capital funding. It targets populations at from youth, families, veterans, single adults. It's used as for rapid rehousing vouchers so that people can access and intervene early so that people don't, to mitigate the risk of someone becoming houseless for a long period of time. Currently the $850,000that is currently in the amended budget, it was the FY23 level. The additional $200 million that was recommended would allow for expansion. And there were, in FY22, I believe, there were 8 rural communities that applied for funds that, because of the amount of funding that were in there, they were not able to access funds for this through this program. So that would be an example of the need. It would also be an example of the implication should the funds not be included at the recommended level. And with that, Madam Chair, that walks through the PowerPoint slides that I have. And if there are any questions, I'm happy to click back through the slides if there are any.
Madam Chair?
Just 1 moment. I have you on the list. I think we were going to go back and revisit. Representative Edgeman had a question, and just to kind of hit the high points on that question that he had, and then we will go back to our list.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In pertaining to slides 9 and 10, we might have covered it to the extent that we could cover it today. But my question was maybe, hopefully not rhetorical in nature, but was substantive. I mean, it just strikes me as why we would not fully fund housing opportunities in conjunction with probably a lot of other broader policy goals that come from the trust fund. And sort of combining HFC and the trust fund and the general fund from state treasury. I don't know if you can respond to that, or you certainly can't speak for the executive branch, but it just strikes me as kind of odd.
Through the chair to Representative Edgeman, maybe just as a reminder, when the Board of Trustees makes their recommendations for state general funds, they're exactly that, recommendations. So we work with the administration and the departments to try and build budgets that reflect the need, take into consideration the state's fiscal circumstances and other things, and then we make those recommendations for state spending to the administration and to the legislature. And hopefully they get funded, but we also recognize that sometimes they don't get funded at the requested amount. Sometimes they exceed it, but their recommendations to.
Can I follow up?
Okay. Follow up.
So we're the appropriating body, the legislature. What would you tell me in terms of why it's good to fund recommendations on these housing items from the trust fund?
Through the chair to Representative Edgeman. Well, in regards to the Housing Assistance Program, slide 10, I mentioned that just last year there were about 8 communities that could not that had needs and had the ability to try and meet those needs, but could not because there wasn't enough funding to do that. The implications for not intervening earlier, and the Housing Assistance Program is an example of rapid rehousing, trying to intervene, get someone a voucher so they can access housing so that they can maintain a job. When it comes to recovery and treatment, it's important for a provider to know where someone's living. It also helps to reduce stress and the anxiety that a person's in when they're trying to receive the services that they need. So it's a preventative measure. It also allows for individuals who might be employed to be able to help to maintain that employment. So there are several reasons, obviously, that, and I think the committee knows, that housing is pretty important when it comes to that and food and family and accessing treatment services as critical for being able to stay in community, contribute and not go into crisis.
Thank you, Madam Chair, for allowing me to sort of jump ahead and get into the capital budget a little bit, but I wanted to take advantage of the opportunity to ask
very
questions.
Good. Thank you. Next up, we have Coach Foster.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You had mentioned that 8 rural communities were hoping to get some of the housing assistance money. With the extra $2 million, would that cover the full amount that was being requested by the 8 communities, or would that just be like a partial?
Through the chair to Representative Foster, I'd like to get back and get you that information. I don't have that off the top of my head.
Through the chair, do you know if the original $850,000 from last year, if any of that went to any rural communities, or was it a mix of rural, urban, or mostly urban, mostly rural? Just yeah.
Through the chair, Representative Foster, if I can provide that information, I can get you that information. Misinformation to the committee.
Thank you.
All right, thank you. Next up, we have Representative Stapp.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Through the chair to Director Williams. So regarding the slide on page 3, I also have a kind of question on the capital budget requests. So I'm curious, you had mentioned earlier that some of these MTAR funding goes directly, so we don't actually see it in the budget. So is that true regarding the home modification programs too, that we're the appropriating $1.15 million for? Is that something that you guys just deal with the individual folks directly, or do you play a role in funding that at the state level?
Through the chair to Representative Stapp. So just for those that might be listening, so the funding that goes out from the trust directly to communities or organizations, we the fund source title we use is authority grants. The MTAR is the money that goes through the state system, the budget system. And we do provide funding through to communities or individuals who request funding for some home modifications, things like making a bathroom ADA accessible, a ramp so that someone can access a home, or in some cases a community center in a local community. We've provided funding for a ramp to make it more accessible for the community.
Thank you.
Representative Josephson.
Yes, thank you.
Representative Hannon.
Thank you, Chair Johnson. I guess my comments are going to be more comments versus questions for Mr. Williams, but I don't think it'll surprise any members of the committee that when we get back to the operating budget, I'm going to be very interested in making sure that we fully fund the recommendations for both the Crisis Now Continuum of Care grants and when we look at the capital budget, some of the special need housing, because according to OMB in 2020, it costs us $1,100 a day to house somebody at API, $142 a day to house them in our prison system, and $51 in supportive housing. And the way we reduce our overall cost is to deal with people sooner and earlier and give them supportive interventions. And I think we've started doing that, but we need to, you know, keep up with the housing demands. And if we can do more supportive housing for folks who qualify for the mental health trust beneficiaries, in theory, it should free up some housing or public safety and crisis needs in communities to allow other people who might not be qualified to find housing. And these seem like very cost-effective ways for us to think of it and making sure we're not just doing it year by year and going, we can save a little money here, because it costs us more if you end up in our prison or in our mental health facility. So it's good to have you here and to look at both the Mental Health Trust Authority looking at the capacity and programs on an ongoing basis and growing them to meet the demands that we have in Alaska, and I don't think we're yet doing that. I don't even think that their recommended budgets meet that demand, but it's what we could do in the next fiscal year.
All right, Representative Galvin.
Thank you, Co-Chair Johnson. I'm going to echo what we heard from Representative Hannon, but I want to add on to another program, the peer support certification. I was honored to be able to meet with a couple who had been through this certification. And frankly, I can't think of a better way to efficiently grow our workforce. And I'm concerned. I guess the one question I have is if you have any numbers that you can share with us with regard to this particular program. I feel like from what I learned in the conversation with two folks, it really opened my eyes, but I don't have any of those numbers on hand. I just wondered if you could share with us a little bit on this piece, because I know it's an efficient way to make sure that we're where we have such a deficit in our workforce. This is an interesting and creative and innovative way of solving it.
Through the chair to Representative Galvin, since the program's inception, which is around 2020-2021, around 130 individuals have been certified and are in the workforce. And I would also note that not only is it critical for the individual to have access to someone with lived experience as they're going through recovery, as they're working with a clinician, it's also a best practice, an evidence-based practice. So this is when we talk about crisis services, when we talk about the services provided either through home and community-based services or through a community behavioral health provider, having someone with lived experience who's engaging with the individual that's engaging in services with their family members maybe is pretty powerful.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Cologne.
Thank you, Chair. Through the Chair, can you explain what the beneficiary mental health status data collection is? The Department of Health, there's quite a bit of money going towards that. I don't know what that is.
Through the chair to Representative Cologne, I can get back with you with some more detail on that, but basically it is looking at a couple of different data sets that the department has, and we work with the department to analyze those. The BRFIS is one of them. I shouldn't even use the acronym because I can't get it off the tip of my tongue, but I can provide you that information, or the committee that information.
Okay.
All right. It looks like we have went through the second presentation and got an update on the governor's amended, the changes after the governor's amended budget. Is there anything else that you would like to add before we close the committee?
To the chair and the committee, I just appreciate the follow-up dialogue related to where things currently stand in the FY24 budget process, and I really encourage the committee to consider the recommendations of the Board of Trustees as it relates to the general fund mental health dollars and to, if possible, find a way to ensure that those are fully funded.
Thank you very much for your presentation. Our next meeting is scheduled for Wednesday, March 15, 2023 at 1:30 p.m. We have a second hearing on HB 62, the Renewable Energy Grant Fund, followed by a presentation from Legislative Legal and Legislative Finance Division on the mechanics of the Constitutional Budget Reserve vote, the reverse sweep, and the effective dates. And with no further business before the committee, we are adjourned at 2:11.